Hello and welcome to Rich Pickings, Fidelity's monthly asset allocation podcast. I'm Richard Edgar, Editor-in-Chief, and with me are three members of our multi-asset team who've emerged from 2 days locked away discussing how they should be positioned across the markets. We have Anna Stubnitsa, global economist and...
And an ex-rower.
An ex-rower, so am I. Eugene Philadelphus, portfolio manager and...
Huge Star Wars fan.
Absolutely, aren't we all? And as always, James Bateman, Chief Investment Officer and...
Former weightlifter.
And who is doing the heavy lifting now, I have to ask you, James. Well, maybe we'll come to that in a moment, but welcome to you all. It's been an interesting month because nothing has changed and yet quite a lot has changed. James, explain yourself.
You know, news flow comes through, you see those developments, you see things happening, and yet actually, having spent those 2 days discussing, digesting all these other things, we came to the conclusion that actually we don't want to change our positioning. We're still very cautiously and uncomfortably overweight equities, we still don't really like fixed income, and we're still neutral cash. So actually, despite the fact a lot's going on, we don't think now's the time to change our positioning.
And why not? What you're seeing data change, you're seeing rhetoric change. Why is this not having an impact on the positioning?
I think the interesting thing is that markets seem to be really reflecting corporate fundamentals and ignoring everything else. And as long as that continues, corporate fundamentals are pretty strong. Things are actually pretty rosy. And so markets are looking through the bad items and the bad news flow and the negatives and actually saying, therefore, there is upside to equities. And if you take that view, you've got to continue your equity overweight however much you're aware your late cycle.
And it sounds like you don't particularly believe it, that this is almost the roadrunner running off a cliff.
It's the painful situation that you know a bear market is somewhere around the corner, and you don't know if that corner is a week away, a month away, or a year and a half away. But what you can't do is be too early calling a bear market. You know, the biggest mistake in investing is calling the bear market way too early. And we're not willing to do that. We've got to keep risk on because it's the right thing to do for our clients.
Eugene, you're nodding your head.
Well, I think that's very fair because we're seeing markets now have progressed to a point where I think even if there is a significant amount of bad news or data that's weaker than expected, I think markets have moved beyond that point where they would expect central banks to come in and bail them out as they have maybe in this cycle or during the cycle up until this point. So as we've gone further up, and you know, valuations are now higher, obviously much higher than they were a few years ago, and earnings are still coming through. I think what we're seeing is that there's much less protection from central banks as well, and so that means that if we do see any bad news, then you know, I think that scenario that James painted does materialize, but there doesn't seem to be anything that can stop this train in its tracks.
For now. Okay. And James, what was the mood around the table as you discussed it? Because I think that's probably one of the key things is, you know, the mood amongst your team and the mood in the wider market.
I think the mood around our team and in the wider market is the same, which is uncomfortable about the need to be overweight risk, but equally resigned to the fact that's the right place to be. And the reason asset allocation is difficult is because you have to take positions that feel uncomfortable, and you have to take them sometimes for quite a long time, but you have to watch the data and what's going on so closely to be ready to change positioning very quickly if there is a real material change.
Well, Anna, let's segue to you. Looking at the data, it is a very sort of mixed picture that we're seeing. It's quite contradictory at times.
I think it's clear that the global growth acceleration that we have seen throughout 2016 and the beginning of 2017 has come to an end. Growth is still at decent levels. It's slowing down in places, but that additional impulse from easy monetary policy and the stimulus that we saw from China last year is no longer there. So we are moving towards a decelerating growth environment. Inflation is weak, and the biggest change really over the past few weeks, and this is what's making everyone uncomfortable, is the shift in the central bank stance. As Eugene mentioned, we used to think that central banks will come and bail out the markets, whatever happens, depending on how the data moves. Well, now they're turning more hawkish and trying to normalize policy, so that protection potentially is no longer there.
Okay, so we're recording this on the fifth anniversary of Mario Draghi's speech that I think he gave just up the road here in London, saying that the European Central Bank was ready to do whatever it takes to preserve the euro, and believe me, it will be enough. Now, I mean, I find it astonishing that is 5 years ago. It certainly doesn't feel like it, but that momentum that he triggered then seems to be petering out now, doesn't it? Are we at the turning of the tide?
Well, the ECB policy is still extremely accommodating, particularly given the stage of the cycle. The growth is accelerating, inflation is mildly picking up, but they have not started normalizing policy really yet. So it's extremely accommodating, and we're still there at that.
And mixed messages from him as well, because he sounded hawkish, and then last week the most recent comments were dovish again.
Yeah, they're testing the market. They are really desperate to avoid the taper tantrum, which was generated by the Fed, by Bernanke's comments a few years ago. And they don't want this taper tantrum. They want this transition towards policy normalization to be very smooth. But it's not going to be easy. And given the amount of liquidity they're still pumping into the system, it's going to be very volatile.
Normalization is going to take quite a while and be very uncomfortable. James?
I think, you know, to my mind, that what central banks are trying to do with their rhetoric is weaning people off that false sense of security. You know, markets cannot be run purely by central bank policy, and that's really what we've seen. We do not get a proper late-stage bull market unless the central banks take the stabilizers off and let markets run by themselves, and I think that's what they're actually trying to do, and I think that's a very healthy thing to do, whether they can do it without causing a crisis or without causing
problems.
Take the
stabilizers off, and if everything's in order, then the markets may well carry on, but take the stabilizers off, we may well have a crash.
Well, exactly. There is absolutely the risk of that, and that's why central banks, I think, are being slightly didactic in saying, on the one hand, we're going to back away, on the other hand, but we're still kind of here. And I think you're going to see that didactic sense of rhetoric for some time, because
a lot of Greek. It sounds like there is a sense of coordination amongst all of the major central banks. They worked very closely together on the way down during the crisis. Can they work together on the way back up again, Anna?
Well, I think this is certainly what they're attempting to do, particularly in response to the recent BIS warning about potential risks to financial stability. So they are trying to address it, although it's not their direct mandate. But in my view, they will not be able to do it because the economies are at different stages of the cycle. And actually, the growth momentum, even in the US, I think it's not as strong as it seems. And moreover, there is still that question about where this inflation weakness is coming from. Is it transitory? Is it more persistent? And I think the jury is definitely still out. So if we don't get inflation picking up and moving towards the target, they will have to reconsider. And I think the Fed, in the first place, perhaps by the end of the year, will have to reassess the current outlook, which is actually quite aggressive.
And the IMF was warning the ECB not to tighten as well in the last couple of days. What are the risks, though, if the central banks start to move in different directions? Because you could see the Fed start to tighten. And then what happens to the Bank of England?
Well, I think the biggest impact would potentially be on the currency. And this is why we've seen some mixed and perhaps more hawkish messages recently from the BOE talking about reversing the emergency accommodation that they introduced last August after the Brexit referendum. I think potentially trying to support the currency sentiment, because obviously they don't want a substantial monetary policy divergence over the next few months. But I think for the BOE in particular, even if they do reverse this emergency hike from last August, this is not going to be the start of the tightening cycle, because all our metrics point to slower growth in the UK, partly or mainly on this Brexit uncertainty. And so the next year is going to be quite tricky.
And, I mean, it was interesting, perhaps, that Andy Haldane, the chief economist, who's been the archdove every time he's spoken for years, it's been about keeping things very easy in the UK. And yet he came out and talked about tightening. Eugene?
Our view is, my view that is that we've got correlation among central bank actions rather than maybe a high degree of coordination. And this is because, central banks are seeing that, markets are doing okay, economic growth is all right, volatility is low, and they're using this environment to message their view that they want to start normalizing policy. We haven't actually seen markets test that hypothesis yet. So we don't actually know how the central banks will react to a pickup in volatility or to a change in sentiment or environment.
Fixed income markets, which you know very well, that's where you would normally start to see the flutters. Yes. Of concern. So what should we look for?
I think you haven't actually seen any of the sort of animal spirits or any of the sort of late cycle behavior in some of the markets that would suggest that we're going past sort of normal behavior into more aggressive, speculative type of borrowing standards or over leveraging in some sectors or in some areas. So we haven't really seen that. I think that my view is that the central banks want to maintain this low level of volatility because it allows them to message and to do things very gradually. And so if there is any change to that environment or that situation, then they will, I think they might actually back off. But I think it will take more than just a normal, 1 or 2 days volatility in markets. We will need to see an extended period of underperformance or weak returns in markets before that actually happens.
But it's this long period of low volatility that's characterized the recent markets, James. I mean, it's very strange.
It is, and I think the low volatility is unlikely to remain as we reach the end of the cycle, and maybe that's one of the reasons we're actually quite confident, in being overweight risk, because actually volatility is abnormally low. It's got to increase at some point. And I think it is the part of that's taking the stabilizers off. That as people feel the stabilizers are off, you'll see greater volatility, you'll see greater price movements. And I think risk will still trend up, but with increased volatility. And that's healthy. I mean, volatility is at an unhealthily low level. And one of the things central banks need to, and I think are cognizant of, is the need to let markets normalize. And that means more volatility.
So we'll look for that. Eugene, your funds are focused on income. As yields start to rise, how do you reposition yourself in the mix you've assembled for a low rate environment?
Well, one of the things that we're looking at is to reduce interest sensitivity and to focus on areas where we think you can earn an attractive level of income without taking too much interest rate risk, because we think interest rate risk is overpriced, especially in some markets and some regions. The other thing that we can do is to look at sectors or areas of the market that will benefit from a rise in interest rates, and one of those is financials. And we approach it differently. So we like financial sort of bank equity in the U.S. because we think they are further ahead in terms of balance sheet repair. They'll have the ability to now pay dividends and return capital to shareholders, so that becomes an attractive income story as well. And in Europe, we've seen COCOs or contingent convertibles or bank capital securities that are offering a higher level of yield than other fixed income securities in Europe. But also you have the continuing balance sheet repair and deleveraging story, which supports it from a credit perspective, and also is one place that you can get an attractive level of income in Europe, apart from the equity market.
So having to look broader and wider. Okay, it's time now for our game, Hot Cakes and Hot Potatoes. What's selling like hot cakes? What would you drop like a hot potato? James, let me start with you. Hot cake?
So I'm going to go with Eugene's European cocos there. I think European financials have positive momentum, and the best place to play that is through cocos.
And hot potatoes?
Controversially, I'm going to go cash. You're going to lose money on cash after inflation. It's something you just don't want.
Absolutely. Eugene, we've pinched your hot cake.
Well, maybe I misunderstood the hot cake and hot potato imagery here, but I think that what is really selling like hot cakes at the moment is US high yield. So for us, that is a cautionary sign for us. So actually that hot cake becomes... somebody else's hot cake becomes our hot potato.
I like it. It's all in one, wrapped up. And Anna, your hot cake.
Yeah, I think I'll stick to emerging markets today, actually. Hot cake is Indonesian rupee, and hot potato is Brazilian equities.
Why is that?
The political environment is deteriorating, and actually the macroeconomic backdrop looks worse, and potentially the country is yet again moving into recession.
Oh dear, what a sad note to end on. I'm afraid we're out of time, but thank you very much for that, and I hope it's given you, listening to this, an insight into the thinking behind this month's asset allocation. If you'd like more detail, it's published in full on our website, and if you'd like to discuss anything we've covered, just ask your Fidelity contact. So thanks very much to my guests, Anna Stubnitska, Eugene Philidithis, and James Bateman, former weightlifter, and thanks to you for listening. We'll be back in a month. Goodbye.
This podcast is for investment professionals only and should not be relied on by private investors. This podcast is provided for information purposes only and is intended only for the person or entity to which it is sent. It must not be reproduced or circulated to any other party without prior permission of Fidelity. The value of investments can go down as well as up, so you may get back less than you invest. For other important legal notices, please see our website or the Fidelity SoundCloud or iTunes apps.